Welcome back to the 27 and to the Boltcast, your AMS2 podcast. Today we have a special treat for you. With me on the line is none other than the Nemesis 69, the man, the myth, the legend. Anyone who has ever dipped their toe into time trial will recognize the name. Holder of dozens upon dozens of world records up and down the leaderboards, captain of the motorsports division of Flashpoint Esports, the shatterer of sim racing dreams around the world. Welcome, Nemesis, and thank you for joining us.
Hi, Tom. Thanks for having us.
Well, great, man. I think it'd be a great opportunity for you to just introduce yourself, let everybody know who you are. Where are you from, man?
Yeah, I'm from Durham in England. I'm just 20 miles away from Newcastle.
All right, man. So I guess let's get right into the nitty gritty. Like, everyone knows who you are. Anyone in the game, you're basically a household name in AMS2. But like, when did you first start sim racing? I think people are probably interested in how you do what you do. So let's start from the beginning. When did you first start?
The very first beginning was back in PlayStation days with Touring Cars, the game. I think that was released in about 1997. That was my first sort of, where I took it a little bit more seriously. The British Touring Car Championship was obviously my favourite series growing up. And just to sort of, you know, when you get to the AI, you think you're rubbing shoulders with the Jason Plato's of the world and, you know, the Alan Menus and stuff like that. So we started off in that game, and it was, even to the day you look back and think that was, you know, such a great game. The graphics were good for, I mean, looking back at 97.
Yeah.
Everybody always says the physics was advanced for its time, even though it was still almost to the point of like an arcade game. You're playing with a controller,
right?
But it just made you feel like, you know, you're doing the British Touring Cars. You know, it was a really good like introduction game.
Yeah. So when did you start realizing that you were actually getting good at it? I'm sure you moved on from the touring car game.
From the touring cars, I then started playing Ferrari 355 Challenge on the Dreamcast.
Okay.
That was roughly, I think, if I'm not mistaken, it was about 1999. That was a bit more challenging. Definitely a bit more different feel in the way it drives with your control pad. But I thought that was a really good game as well. And then it was like Forza. Started off in Forza Motorsport.
Okay. So I'm starting to see a pattern here. It's just sort of just like getting up in advancement.
Yeah.
And then obviously the games themselves, they just got better and better over time.
Oh, definitely, yeah. And I think it was when the first Xbox come out, Project Gotham Racing.
Okay.
Really enjoyed that one. Played that for quite a few years.
Did you play Gran Turismo?
I did play a little bit of Gran Turismo. I wasn't really that hooked on it.
Right.
Obviously, the Talk of Touring Car game was my favourite ahead of that. It was more my scene of what like I've grew up watching.
Right,
From being like a young age, going to racetracks with my dad, watching, you know, start off watching Rallycross, and then when the touring cars come to our local circuit at Croft, which is obviously part of the British Touring Car Championship calendar.
Right.
You know, that was my only game that I wanted to play. You look at the cars, the drivers, the, you know, the smell, and you just think, I want that to be me.
Right.
Even like from 10 years old, I think we can all relate to that. And that's obviously why we do sim racing.
Yeah.
It's just something to...
There's a connection. It's not just a game.
Yeah, to get close to it, you know. We haven't had, like, you know, we're not all sort of got the money to say I'm going to go out and buy a race car and get me a race license and I'm away, sort of thing, you know.
Yeah.
I think there were like the early days where you would think, oh, you know, I want to be in that car and driving around that circuit with these guys out there.
So what was the first game that I guess you could consider you took seriously as like an adult?
It was probably Project Cars 1, the first series. And I do believe that was released in 2015, and I didn't get it until it became free. on the Xbox Gold Pass.
That's smart.
in being tight and all.
Right,
no, it's just something I bypass because, you know, when you, it's a bit like how people say now, when they get stuck in like sort of their set game, they think their game's like the ultimate.
Right.
I was always like, oh, Forza, you know, Forza's the game, that's the best one. And I sort of overlooked, every time I went to the shop, I overlooked Project Cars and didn't even give it a try.
Right.
You know, so just like sort of, I picked the box up and, you know, when you're a kid and you have a look at, like, you know, and, you know, you just think to yourself, nah, I don't want that.
Right, right, yeah. Whatever goes through a kid's mind.
I'm saying kid, I wasn't that, you know, I was still pretty, like, almost like adult then when Project
right.
Cars was out. But, yeah, I think I didn't get it until about February 2017, if I believe. Started playing that with a controller. I mean, there's a good story behind this. And my cousin was round my house, and I says, I'm not liking how this feels on a controller, but it's absolutely awesome with a, you know, with a steering wheel and pedals. He says, oh, my friend's got one. Ask him if he wants to sell it. So next, you know, I think it was like a week later. He says, oh, he's got a Thrustmaster TX. He says you can have it for £40. I was like, £40? I was like, is he sure? He's like,
wow.
Yeah. He's only had it a couple of months. He doesn't, he's not really into it. I says, all right, okay. So I'm still using that wheel to the day.
Really?
Yeah, and I bought it for £40. Obviously, I've had a few problems over the last few years. I mean, I think the last...
Well, the thing's 4 or 5 years old.
Yeah, the last year. I mean, obviously, the last year I've been driving with broken pedals, a wheel that is pressing buttons by itself, you know, when the force feedback gets a little bit ramped up. So
it shakes your ARBs.
So what I used to
traction
do is
control,
like,
you just have to turn the wheel a certain way, and you can increase or decrease your traction control. You don't need the to bind any buttons.
Yeah, it's just a bit awkward when I go around the corner and it's putting me brake bias to like 52, and I go, oh no.
So you played Project Cars 1, but I know personally of you from Project Cars 2.
And
I remember I played in two different short stints, a very, very short stint when I first got the game. I think it was basically for pittance. And then the second time last year, I played it for a longer stint. This is before I knew of you or knew you, but I started to be like seeing the same name over and over again. And Project Cars 2 is where I think you started to really make a name for yourself, right?
Yeah, I bought it on, obviously, I really enjoyed the Project Cars 1 after obviously just, you know, getting it for free and think, wow, this game, why did I not buy this from release? Because, I mean, I was an Xbox guy. That was the best thing on Xbox, you know, full stop. It was amazing visuals. The cars felt really good. I mean, I didn't have the money to buy a PC, so that was like the best option for me.
Right.
So then Project Cars 2, bought that on day release. And then sort of, you know, it was the Project Cars 1 days. I mean, it, you know, when you get a wheel and stuff, Tom, it's like, you know yourself, there's a massive adaption
right.
Phase. So, I mean, it's a game I never played before. I've never used a wheel before, and I think it was maybe 4 weeks, 4 weeks, 5 weeks. And then there was a DTM class on Project Cars 1, which it's a shame it never got entered into Project Cars 2. And I had to go to the TT, and I remember like slotting in the top 10, like amongst like the top guys. And I thought to myself, well, I've only been on it 4 weeks, you know, and then you start sort of getting a hint that, like, you know, it pushes you on and inspires you to, like, you know, go further.
Right, yeah.
And then Project Cars 2, just a natural progression because, I mean, basically there was nothing changed in the way anything handled, you know, the cars were the same. It was just basically port over new cars.
Okay.
You
so,
know?
I mean, I imagine maybe, it was a little bit more sophisticated. The graphics were better.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, the graphics were better.
But there was a familiarity.
The live track, you know, and it was all, there was all sorts of different features. But I mean, you know, familiarizing yourself with it all, it was, you know, it was just an easy like transition. So, but yeah.
So that's when you started. I you know, you started getting really serious, and I know you've mentioned before with me that it led to some really interesting esports opportunities for you. Is that right?
Yeah. It was in 2018. It was the first time I see on the game that a manufacturer actually put up like a sort of an esports event within the game. I mean, because the best thing about obviously the, you know, slightly modern, that used to have like with the TT boards, you used to do like a weekly TT.
Mm-hmm.
But the like incorporated like the Reynolds esports into the like the TT event, so to qualify. But it was only like people from the UK were like eligible.
I see.
So so I think I do believe it was like, you know, obviously it was all Reynolds cars. The first round was the Reynolds Megane Rallycross. At the French Rallycross track.
Okay.
And I do that. I qualified on the first event for that.
So you
one.
Qualified on a in a rally car.
In a rally car.
That's sick.
And I still kept on doing the other ones. Obviously, the the second one was a Renault Clio. Then they had a Renault Megane V6.
Clio, of course.
and I think they've done some time trials in that RS01 as well. But like everybody had a chance to qualify. I think it was like the top six, like was then in the semi. Like this is what they call the semi-final. So it was six from each event. You know, there's like four different time trials.
So completely open six, qualifiers for everybody in the game.
Yeah, yeah. Obviously, if they're from the UK though.
Okay.
And it's, you know, if you qualified in the first event, them top six can out, you know, they're through. So then the next six in the next round won't be the six from the first, you know what I mean?
Right.
So it was always like, you know, you're getting different players in. And then the semi-final was, you had like 30 minutes on track. And it was at Spa and the Reynolds RS01. And I just got into the final. My good friend, Alan Brown, I used to race with from SRL. I just pipped him by 0.080, like less than a tenth, to qualify for the final. And obviously,
Do you think he holds a grudge?
No, he keeps on sometimes, you know, when I've last spoke to him, and I don't think he ever forget about it. But
can't believe it. When you know the guy and they know you.
Yeah, it was
awkward at dinner parties.
It was awkward, yeah. I mean, in the final, I think the team that I was in at the time, there were six of us from the same team in the final.
Yeah.
And then that was like just like a race. So it was at Catalunya. Obviously, the Barcelona circuit. And that was in the Megane V6.
Okay.
And I ended up winning it. So, obviously, I was like the Xbox Reynolds Esports champion. And then I progressed to the final, which was at Silverstone. So, I got like invited to go down to Silverstone.
Okay. So, hold on one second. So, everything up to this point, you were at your home setup. But then they invited you to a third-party location.
Down at Silverstone, for the final. Wow. It was on the Grand Prix weekend, and it was also when England was playing Sweden in the World Cup.
Dude, that sounds like Project Cars 2. They really marketed that game really well.
So that was quite an experience. So I went down with me missus, and we travelled down to Silverstone and stuff like that. And you know, I was really, really confident going. I thought, you know what it is, I could win this, because at the end of it, the winner got a deer at Palmer Sport.
What's that?
Palmer Sport UK, which is like, it's like almost like a driving academy. They have all the driving coaches.
Oh, okay.
So for winning it, you got to drive like BMW, M4, GT4, Formula Renault. There was all sorts of different cars the winner got to drive. I was really pumped up thinking, you know, this is my chance, you know, because I thought...
Was that like scouting opportunity? Like, they get you in these cars in real life and they'd have some people around be like, okay, let's keep an eye on this kid. Was it that?
Yeah,
like that?
Potentially. I thought that was a big chance to try, like, prove something if I got that far. I mean, it was just basically as a prize to be like, you know, oh, well done, you know, you get to drive these nice cars. But I thought, well, if I get to that point, I might have to prove a point that I can actually do it out of a sim, and I might catch somebody's eye.
That was the era where I think maybe that was like sort of like a groundbreaking era as far as I can remember. Like, I don't think, like, obviously within the last 5 years, sim racing has sort of created this partnership with real life racing, but that sounds like it was right on that ground floor of that, you know, the start of things where, you mm-hmm. know, real mm-hmm. life racing teams were starting yeah. to try to talent search in esports.
That's it. I mean, the final was obviously, you know, I won the Xbox. Then there was me friend NGR Fraser who won PlayStation 4. And then there was James Baldwin, who's obviously world's fastest gamer now. And there was also his teammate, Veloci Brembo. I think James just made the transition from, I think is it F4M? Or F4H, I can't remember which one it was. He was in that team, and then Veloci signed him up. James actually made it to that final against me mm-hmm. by qualifying on a rally weekend. I think his game that he qualified on was on Dirt 4 in the Renault Megane.
Okay.
So he got a bye to our final in that.
Okay, so it was like a multi-game, like a...
Yeah, they sort of merged that okay. That weekend. The rally event, and with him winning down on the rally game,
interesting,
they merged James into the final for Project Cars. And obviously, you know, he's such a cool character. He's so composed. I mean, I was quite edgy. I mean, it was I've never used PC before. I was using PC you know, as the platform on the day. I was using Fanatec wheel when I was using a Thrustmaster. I was just thinking, oh God. You know, I was using load cell pedals. You know, it was just completely out of my comfort zone.
Did they give you any practice time? I imagine
not really, not really. Oh, they did a little bit. Obviously, it was like a full setup on the Reynolds stand. We had the commentator, which some people might know. It was Actrovision.
Okay.
He was the... He was a commentator, and they had obviously like everybody crowding around watching and stuff like that. You know, they had photographers, they had everything, you know. So I was quite like sort of nervous because I was always, what was in my mind is like, I've never raced on PC, and I always knew there's a difference. We've come from Xbox to PC.
Right.
Like, you can't just transition that quick. As when I was on in the live show, the frame rate and everything's quicker. So where my sort of reference points were, even though it was might be only milliseconds, it's enough to throw us on my breakpoints and stuff.
Okay.
And obviously with the equipment, I mean, Fanatec, it was a fantastic wheel, you know, with the load cells and everything.
So you did like it more?
Sorry?
You did like it more, the Fanatec and the load cells? I can imagine.
Yeah, it felt great. I mean, obviously that was the top stuff back then.
Yeah.
See, there's some fantastic equipment out there, but I've just stuck to my trusty TX. It served me well. I know the wheel inside out. I know, you know, right. It gives me the right cues that I need. Even like I say, because what happened is obviously when I was telling you about running on dodgy pedals, my brake pedal snapped. So what I had to do was use the clutch spring and put it into my brake pedal. And now, obviously, I had loads of flex in my throttle as well. So it's like, you know, sometimes you tell people and they don't believe you. Like, there's no way you're doing, like,
right.
putting them times in with, like, broken equipment and that. But it just goes to prove you don't have to have, you know, the top high-end stuff. If you've got the determination and sort of the drive to succeed and try to get yourself out there. I mean, the final was a massive, obviously, learning curve.
Yeah.
You know, because, I mean, I seen James, how cool he was. You know, he was composed. He just sort of, he was almost looked part of like the cockpit, if you know what I mean. Like, it wasn't phasing him.
Right. That's cool.
And, you know, whereas like we were a bit like, you know, we're up against well, it here.
I'm sure he's not a robot. I'm sure he felt that too. Ice water in his veins,
Oh, they're an excellent team, you know, obviously when they're in Veloci and that, you know, they're well drilled, well trained.
So how did the race turn out for you?
Yeah, it didn't go too bad. It was a bit up and down. I think it was just a bit of everything, really, nerves. You know, I thought it was my big opportunity. I was confident going down, but when you get there, it's a different thing. I mean, I've only been literally sim racing for 6 months. Next, you know, I'm in a final. You know, it was quite an experience, to say the least. I mean,
rocket ship experience to start a game, and then 6 months from there, you're in a crowd of people for something that's on stake. It's not just like if you make a mistake and there's no reset button, it's sort of like it's permanent. I empathize with you, man. That's rough.
You take a lot from it, though. I mean, you know, I walked away and, you know, you see them guys and, you know, how good they were and stuff like that. Whether they're being used to PCs and that sort of equipment, it's by to buy. But, like you say, you walked away and I thought, right, that's it. I want to knuckle down here now and don't make this the last experience. But I kind of went on a bit of a break because, I mean, we just had another child and stuff like that. But I was always determined, like, you know, that's not the last. You're going to hear of us sort of thing, you know what I mean?
Right, yeah.
It's just to always try making, an impression.
So, obviously, AMS2 and Project Cars 2 have a shared history because of the SMS engine. So, one of the things I wanted to ask you, and it's actually kind of quite obvious, but I wanted to hear it in your words, you know, AMS2, when you heard that it was coming on the market, you know, you might have heard at some point that they were going to use SMS. What thought crossed your mind at that point? And Project Cars 2 is actually still going moderately
still going strong, small, really.
Strong, yeah. Mm-hmm. So what intrigued you about AMS2?
I was quite excited by it when I knew it was using the same engine. Obviously, some of the communities and stuff that I was in and that they're all sharing the posts and you know, I didn't know nothing about automobility, you know, I'd never really heard of it
because,
I wasn't on PC. I mean, I was always Xbox. But that's what made me decide to get a PC. I mean, I didn't get my PC until 2020. So it was just before the game got released, I think it was.
Okay, so did it have the familiarity to you that you remember from Project Cars 2? Because I think I remember from when I made the switch over to AMS2, I saw your name there too in the time trial.
Yeah.
So I was like, okay, there's got to be, you know, there's something going on.
The transition wasn't, it was different. It definitely felt different from the off.
Right.
I first switched it on. And I literally tried to go the speed I was going in Project Cars 2, and I was just like, it kind of gives us a bit of a reality check, and like, I can't drive like this on this game. And it took us a little while to get me bearings. But obviously I noticed straight away there's a difference in the physics and the core of the game itself.
Right.
What kept me on track is the visuals. So I use all visuals as my cues.
Okay.
It's never really dependent on how the physics is feeling. It's all on my eyesight.
Okay.
So, you know, obviously you are getting the sensations in your hands through the force feedback and the detail. Yes, that's helping. But the main thing is through what you're seeing.
Right.
And it just translated because it just happens that it's the same sort of graphics engine.
Yeah.
It doesn't mean to say, oh, well, you know, you're good in that. So you've gone over and you're good in this one.
Right.
People would automatically assume, oh, well, the game must be the same. But the complete core of the game is completely different.
Yeah,
it's just the cues what helps me along to do what I can do, what I've done in Project Cars 2.
I felt the same way. It was like, it was similar, but enough not similar that it felt completely different, even though it had that shared history.
Yeah.
So, did you jump right back into TT? Was that the first thing that you started to explore in AMS2? I think at that time when it first came out, like that was pretty much the only game mode that was pretty accessible to everybody, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
Not many people want to log into a game and play, you know, practice day, you know?
Yeah.
So there's two things you could do. You can race or TT, so.
Yeah, I mean, I was TT, and obviously because at the start there was a bit of with the multiplayer, there was a few issues in beta, obviously because I bought it early access. obviously we had like the neck cord issues and stuff like that. So I just really focused on TT from the beginning and just thought, well, let's see if I can sort of, you know, get back to sort of some decent lap times.
Were you the first person on the, you know, leaderboards in a lot of cases?
On some of them. I mean, some of them that you see when they're not really populated, I don't bother because that doesn't sort of stimulate us to sort of want to try.
Right.
You know, I've got to see a massive list of people and, want to put myself out there. It's like, I've got to have that sort of like push to, you know, motivation to do something.
Right.
I mean, you know, obviously when you put yourself up there, there's always people who's going to want to knock you off your perch.
Right, you're a competitive element to it that you just need to have that challenge.
That's it. It's just a challenge that, you know, if you, no matter what you do in life, you always need a challenge to keep on pushing yourself further.
Right.
If there's nobody to challenge you anymore, then you might as well just stop playing the game.
I think everybody's different in that regard. You have to find inspiration for what you do from wherever you get your inspiration from. Your challenge may be seeing a lot of names on a board and be like, hey, I'm going to beat all these guys today. Mine might be like completely different. I want to complete a lap today at Nordschleife or something like that, you know? How do you approach, you know, you selecting a car and a track? Are you looking at cars that are popular cars first then?
Yeah, usually popular cars. I mean, if I can give any advice to anybody, I mean, anybody new to the game or people who've played the game a while, I mean, if you find yourself good at a series, stick at it, because you can learn a lot from one set car and then you can transfer your skills to others. It's like any game. I mean, going back to when I bought the PC steel, I mean, I bought all of them. I bought Race Room with all the content. I bought a set of Corsa, the original, and ACC as well. I tried them all and I just couldn't get on with them. I mean, Set of Corsa was more like a fun game to me in the terms of I was downloading mods and I was using cars that I've never like driven before, and it was just sort of like, oh well, I can drive a Nissan Primera around Silverstone.
Okay.
And that was just like sort of my, you know, go to for a bit of fun and use
cars. I never played AC. Does it have like a time trial mode?
No, it doesn't have nothing like that. So it was kind of like, I think it might have, but it's not really, like leaderboard structured sort of thing. I don't see. Know.
Okay, so that takes that element out of it. We already established that's a big draw for you is having that that leaderboard system.
And obviously on the ACC, it was just like kind of, it just, when I started playing it, it just didn't feel right. It didn't suit my style. I mean, it didn't feel like I could do nothing with the car. Felt like I couldn't drive on the edge without all these different aids kicking in, and you know, it just didn't seem for me. So obviously that's, you know, I started investing more time in AMS2.
Right. Yeah, I felt the same way when I played ACC. It was you know, thinking back on it, it's a different game engine, completely different approach. A lot of different things that were kind of, you know, odd. I thought the game was compelling graphically. I thought the theme was really great. The cars sounded great. I wanted to get good at it, but at the same time, I started catching the mechanical, my interest in mechanical components of the cars was growing. Mm-hmm. And I know one of the reasons why I went to Project Cars 2 after ACC was to learn telemetry, believe it or not. Project Cars 2 is a gorgeous game for telemetry, and learning telemetry is so straightforward. And there's a lot of, because the game was so mature, there was a lot of third party resources that you could take advantage of. Like for example, you could get an Excel spreadsheet off the internet and basically tune a car before you even sit down in the game. So you just plug in what you worked on through the spreadsheet with all of the dampers worked out and all of the, you know, bump transition speeds ironed out, plug it in the game, and then you have a basic stable platform to develop setups
to work
for.
From.
But one of the things that intrigued me about AMS2, though, was that, because I, you know, when I saw that they had that kind of Project Cars 2 approach towards the setup work, I was really optimistic about it.
That's it.
So getting back to you, though, what you know, you have a car, it's a popular car, there's a lot of times on the board. What's your approach to TT? Maybe do you stick with tracks that are more familiar to you, or are you not afraid to try a new track?
I do a majority of them. The only one I don't do is Nordschleife.
Okay.
The
reason why that you don't Nords?
It might be an unpopular opinion, but it just doesn't do it for us. It just doesn't stimulate us enough to be driving that same lap for over 6 minutes.
Yeah.
I want to like set a lap within a couple of laps.
Yeah.
And move on to
minute,
the next
30
one.
Seconds.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. So I think Nords is sort of like the marathon.
Mm. It's like Bathurst is obviously my like one of my sort of go tos, like slightly, you know, it's not the biggest track, but I think it's challenging and it's, you know.
Yeah.
It's sort of that track what sort of, you know, it gets you in the moment. It gives you the sense of speed, the sense of like,
of course,
you're in the car.
Yeah.
You're running sort of inches away from barriers coming down the mountain.
Yeah. Yeah. And then I think that part when you're coming down the mountain where you go over that little hill before that slight right to the braking zone, that's when it really starts to kick in.
That's it.
And you're going
fast. Slightly off camber, isn't it? Off
a little bit as well. I think I did one turn when I did a race in the Super V8. And the way the camera is on the track side view, it's like tucked in right next to the track. And you buzz by the camera so fast, and it sort of like was like, wow, I was cooking. And then like the back end was coming around. I was trying to pass a guy. I was like, holy smokes, this is some speed right there. You don't really realize that sometimes when you're sitting in the seat holding the wheel. But yeah, like that's one of the things I love about AMS2 is the replay system is you can really get, you really feel like, I really feel like the cars look more like they look like race, like you're racing, but like when you're in driving the car, it sometimes could be a struggle. You're constantly making minor adjustments here and there, you know, as you do when you're on the edge. Yeah. But then in the replay, you're like, wow, that looks legit. You know, that looks like that looks legit. So what's your, you know, what's your favorite car? What's your class?
I've got a few. I mean, I'm liking the GTEs.
Oh yeah.
I mean, you know, they're nice and solid.
That's an easy one.
You can sort of swing them in.
They're great.
I've got to say the Ginetta Super Cups, and even when they were a bit dicey on the rear, a few builds back, I still like enjoyed that sort of on your edge of the seat sort of drive about it.
Right.
It's because like, you know, you hear guys like in other games, and to get the best out of these sort of sometimes the rear wheel drive cars, you are sort of on a very slight slip angle to maximize the performance.
And
that is exactly how a real race car can be driven from the rear wheels, power and steering, throttle control from the rears. So if anybody ever wants to practice with like getting to grips with obviously, you know, driving a car from the back wheels, it's the Ginetta Super Cup.
Yeah, I remember watching your recent league play, and you were in a Super Cup at I think it was Nürburgring, and I think you picked up some suspension damage, so the car was a little out of whack.
But yeah, man, I think I had to drive it even more out of from the back. I literally driving the whole car from the back.
You drove the crap out of that car. It was amazing to watch. Like at the point where I think you were like in maybe fourth or fifth or something, but at that point,
like a drift show.
It was a drift show. It was just, I was like, how is he doing this with a broken car? That's when I was like, I tell you, since I've met you, like I've had several moments of like just absolute, just like wow moments. Like you don't really fathom, you know, obviously you have the first impression is okay, his times on the leaderboards are 2 seconds faster than what I could ever dream of like doing right now. So, and then after that, when I got to, when I met you, it's sort of just like watching your onboards and your YouTube channel where you feature a lot of your world record, you know, laps. There was one that struck out. There was a time when I was watching your Merc GT3 time trial
video. Oh, yeah,
about
Monaco.
And there was that camera angle where you're going one, through one of the chicanes in the third sector. And you were like banging the car off the walls. And yeah. I was like, whoa. Like, I didn't think the car could do that. Like, it looked like the front was going going right. And then the left, the rear was going left. And then you were hanging onto it. And then, boom, you're snapped into the next, like, the next corner. I was just like, that's crazy. So Nürburgring, that race was another, like, holy smokes moment for me. I was like, this cat is, like, he's got it. You've got it, quote unquote, it. So let's, we talked about your favorite cars, GTEs and Super Cup. Let's talk about your GTEs, least Super favorite. Cups. Let's talk about your least favorite.
Least favorites probably is anything open wheel, especially classics.
I don't think anybody really like. I think classics are sort of like the first time you try scotch.
Yeah,
people drink it's this. Just like,
so you've just drank something sour, like, you know, when your eyes go like, oof.
Yeah,
you know, I don't know. Don't get us wrong, I mean, I've seen them sort of cars in real life when being like Silverstone classic events and stuff like that, and beautiful pieces of machinery and stuff, but I've never really been interested in like Formula One, you know, even now. So it's like kind of like it's never been like my go-to cars,
right?
Same with like GT3s, you know, I've always liked GTE, you know, thought like the big brother was the better one,
right?
You know, it's more like, it's more meaty, it's got more power, it sounds better.
Right,
you know, it's, you know. But yeah, anything open wheel, really. I mean, I drive them, especially like the more modern stuff, like sort of, you know, what you would class as like a Formula Ford, them sort of F3 type ones. I don't mind them.
Yeah, well, they have sort of, they're like sort of training cars for a lot of different series. You can go from a Formula Advanced to a GT quite easily because the weight transfers are there. But, you know, the more modern you get in the Formula One categories, it sort of changes. Mm-hmm. The cars are become, you know, it's more of an aero, more precision. You lose a lot of that, you know, a lot of that edge of grip feel. Although some of the cars still have it, and I think in AMS2, they still have that little bit of touch of edge of grip.
Yeah, yeah, definitely.
But those retro cars, I agree with you. There's something to behold, really, when you're first driving them for the first time. When I was struck at how monstrous they were when I drove some of the Lotus 79 and the Brabham BT46B. And I came away with it with a much better appreciation for the guy back then.
I know. When you see the onboards, the onboard footage from, you know, back in the days of the guys driving them, it's just absolutely unbelievable.
Yeah.
I mean, they're on the edge and...
They're on the edge with a car that doesn't like being on the edge very much. It's not designed to be.
I mean, I think within the game, obviously, within AMS2, them sort of cars, I think it's just the lack of detail. And that's by no means anything to do with the way it's being developed.
You mean you think they're crude? You think they're just abrupt?
Yeah, I think that's just the way they were in them days. So it's probably replicating sort of like you can't get the finer details and like the understanding of what's going to happen next underneath you.
Right.
You know, one minute you think you're all right, and the next minute, you know, the rear tires just kick.
Yeah.
You give it a little bit too much throttle out of the corner. You know,
it's like you're riding a wild horse or something, try to break it. That's exactly. And you're not, you know, riding like a thoroughbred, which is, yeah, I felt the
it's
same
kind
way.
Of, it's kind of like, you know, when you think to yourself, it's kind of like what I would call a gentleman driver's car. You know, if you're a steady Eddie and, you know, you don't like driving up most of the cars literally as fast and as flat out as they can go, then, you know, the kind of would be perfect if you're just sort of cruising around.
Right.
And just setting sort of half competitive lap times. I mean, there's no doubting there'd be guys out there who's just unbelievable in these sort of cars. But for me, you know, personally, the way I like to drive, it's either like flat out or nothing.
Right. Okay.
So
So let's segue into your career. Now you're a you're the captain of Flashpoint's Esports Motorsports division. That's how we got in touch with one another, or you got in touch with me, I should say. Tell us about how that came about. What is Flashpoint, and you know what do you do in that organization?
Yeah, so it came about in 2019. We're in the I owned a sort of community slash sort of club called LTFR, which was Lights to Flag Racing. Now I set like sort of, you know, our team of drivers together and stuff like that. And we always used to do like the leaderboards on Project Cars too. And like we'd have 10 of our drivers in the top 10. And we used to just keep on doing that on the weekly competitions, you know. And obviously the McLaren Shadow event come up. And obviously we all agreed that we're all going to give it a shot. I do believe at the end of it, after four rounds, we managed to finish seven of us in the top 20 in Europe. So almost half of our squad occupied the top 20 in the whole of Europe between Xbox and PlayStation 4.
That's impressive.
And actually one of my teammate at the time, Pipes, he actually won the qualifying rounds. I finished fifth, which I was a little bit, I was disappointed with. I mean, when you look back, I thought, well, I should have done better. But if you look at some of the names in it, you had a guy, Manuel Rodriguez, who's like, does Gran Turismo. He was driving for Team Redline, who sort of like Max Verstappen and them's in that sim racing team. We look at some of the names in it, you know, there's some top boys in it within like Xbox and PlayStation. And when it transferred across, even though I was fifth in Xbox and PlayStation, I do believe I was still within the top 10 with PC as well. So our times were on par with PC.
Okay.
But it come about because of that. I think the manager at the time for Sim Racing, for Flashpoint, he had obviously some sort of association with Logitech. And he just obviously contacted us asking if obviously we, you know, we'd be interested in like having a motorsport division within the Flashpoint.
Right.
Obviously Flashpoint's an American esports team. You know, they've got the various teams what they've got, you know, like Apex Legends, CS:GO,
first person stuff.
All like Rocket League, Rainbow Six.
I actually like watching first person stuff, but I don't like actually playing it. I watch tons of Apex Legends.
Yeah, exactly. But yeah, that's how it come about. Obviously, they picked up on, you know, us having sort of that many guys within the top 20 within Europe, you know, and all the team has done fantastically well. To, you know, they should be all proud of themselves to get to that point.
Of course.
Because obviously, my teammate who won the qualifying, he got to go to Germany and race in the final. Obviously, you know, like a big thing. So obviously, I think the winner got to be on the McLaren Shadow team.
Really?
unfortunately, you know, he just come up a little bit short against some, like, you know, really top guys.
Yeah.
But he made a good account of himself.
Yeah. It sounds like it's. It's really cutthroat. Like, it's, you get one shot. You're like, you're Eminem in 8 Mile. It's like you get one opportunity, you know?
Yeah.
And you better, you know, bring it. Although in 8 Mile, I think Eminem had like five or six opportunities. But nevertheless, yeah, it seems like a pressure's on right then and there. And
that's it. I mean, some of these guys, you know, I don't know. I think they received like Logitech wheels and stuff, like prior to going.
Okay. So they got to practice, like, with the equipment first.
That's yeah, nice. so they got to practice with the equipment. Yeah.
Okay.
Fair. I think as it stood, you know, I think he nearly didn't end up going because they were just going to count it like on PC, like whoever was like top on PC.
Yeah.
You know, instead of taking it like from Xbox and PlayStation as well. So that's how he obviously ended up going, because he was a winner of like the sort of the console wars. But yeah, I mean, even that was a good experience. You know, you're slaying away and you're looking every day and you're thinking, I've only got to make up a tenth and I'm in the, you know,
oh, wow.
I'm at the top.
It's right there. You like, see the number on the screen. Oh, that's got to be frustrating. It would kill me.
It was just getting that extra,
oh
like,
my gosh.
You know, to get that extra two temps against sort of guys who's,
yeah,
faster.
But you're already at that point where you're like throwing the car around to get what you got.
Mm-hmm.
How do you throw it even more around? Oh my God. I can't even imagine.
When I look back at that time though, I mean, GT3, I mean, you know yourself, it's not really my major thing.
Mm-hmm.
So I always avoided GT3 and I like stuck to like the touring car class on project cars and stuff like that.
Yeah.
And then obviously when this come up, I started trying to obviously slay the McLaren GT3 around, but it was just a complete different sort of tool to what I was used to.
Yeah.
Had I been investing in it from the start, I might have gotten a little bit higher up, you know, but, you know, threw everything at it. I mean, fifth is still nothing to be sniffed at. I mean, you know.
Yeah, of course. And
in Europe.
Nowadays, you're a mainstay on the GT3 leaderboards. It's undeniable. It's one of the more popular classes for people, for a lot of reasons. Accessibility,
yeah, exactly.
But also the sense of speed. It's mm-hmm. also popular in a lot of other games, and people gravitate towards it as they do in AMS2. And I think my channel,
mm-hmm.
too, was basically almost GT3 only for about 3 or 4 months.
Yeah.
Before
I was gonna say,
snapped
I mean,
to my senses.
I mean, that's why, I mean, going back, I mean, that's why I chose AMS2. I mean, for the terms of how it gives us, like what we talked about, that sense of speed, and
yeah,
you
really
can actually feel
it.
You can
yeah.
feel the springs compressing, and that I can like sort of be on the throttle and have confidence that it's not just going to whip me around. Like
yeah.
I've been on some games where I'm wanting to, you know, I'm having to wait. Okay, right, the computer wants us to put the throttle in now. You know, it's kind of
but
like
you don't feel it.
I'm dictating to the game when I want to be on the throttle, not when it wants me to be on the throttle.
Yeah.
You know, that's the
like
difference.
You can control the car the way, like that's the thing that also another thing that I should mention back to what I add this to what I meant before. There was another thing when I started watching your world record times besides the in Mercedes, was you do most of your world record times on defaults. And my experience with defaults is I don't particularly enjoy driving on them, but then there was an aha moment when I was like, oh my God, he's driving these on defaults, what's he doing? And I realized that you are manipulating the car mechanics with your foot and your
mm-hmm.
and your wheel, like basically
mm-hmm. yeah.
And I just
yeah.
like that's another level of driving to me
because mm-hmm. you obviously you can throttle blip, so
yeah.
I can gather more rotation by throttle blipping, or I can manipulate the initial turn in.
Right.
And that's nothing to do with the physics, because you can do that in a proper car.
Yeah.
If I just give it a little sort of slight movement, I can already start gathering my rotation before I even hit the apex.
Right. And that was
but
another
I've also
thing.
Got you,
that,
you've got to have your visuals as well on cue, so everything's got a line
yeah.
into one.
It's amazing. And then I remember when we worked together for the first time really closely for a league was the Porsche. And the thing that surprised me about that exercise, which I thought was just fascinating for me, was you were on the throttle, I think maybe 10 seconds before I started braking. So like when you drove the car, you were like, hey, Tom, what about this right front? You know, it's burning up. And I'm like, Craig, I already made it so like the car is unstable, like the rear, it's turning yeah. with the rears already. Okay. And then I realized, I was like, you're on the throttle way sooner and more
mm-hmm.
And you can control it through that circumstance.
Mm-hmm.
Just amazing stuff.
That's it. I mean, that's going back to obviously to build and stuff like that, yours or anybody else's and stuff like that, you know, sort of grabbing setups from the TTs, just, you know, to put it out there, is no good to then go into a race. You know obviously we have to get that message out, and like you're basically taking a build that's set up for a track that's optimal
mm-hmm.
and then trying to go into a race and saying, oh, there must be something wrong with the game.
Yeah,
it's not, it's the setup that's wrong. because the setup's not specific for a race.
Right.
It'll be good over one lap, and you'd be like, wow, I'm flying. I've left these for 4 seconds up the road one lap. And then all of a sudden, you're just dropping off, and then you're off the track.
Yeah.
You know, people's got to start thinking, I'm not going to go and grab the top TT time. What I'm going to do is I'm going to, you know, grab your builds from YouTube and then go from there. And then, you know, you've given people an excellent ballpark, but also to suit their style, like what we've done, Tom, what we spoke about. I changed a few little tweaks here, a few little tweaks there to suit how I like the car to feel.
Yeah, exactly.
And we weren't more or less changing the full, like, fundamentals of its mechanics.
Yeah.
It was just slight, maybe up the steering rack or, you know, give it a little bit extra, like on the springs or, you know, anything like that, wasn't it?
You liked a little extra rear wing than I thought the cars needed. I was always fascinated by how much softer you liked the front of the car, especially on the Porsche. I think I tried that build. You know, obviously I helped design it, but obviously I'm driving it. I'm like, it helped me learn how to drive the car too. Don't get me wrong. Mm-hmm. So it was a good experience for me, but it was the exercise I thought was the fascinating component about our work was the troubleshooting and how we approached each different problem. It all wound up being the tires trying to keep the tires underneath you because we know that the defaults, you can rip them to shreds in the first lap and, you know, they actually don't even have any wear in time trial.
Yeah.
Like, so you can lock them up. It doesn't matter. Like, you can lock them up. It doesn't matter, maybe except a little bit of tire heat, but that's it. But
just like real world cars, isn't it?
Yeah.
You know, just like a real world car. I mean, if you were to run out, you know, say, you know, we went and bought a McLaren GT4, and then we went on a track and we never put a setup on it.
Yeah.
Your driver's going to come back in after 2 minutes and say, this car's shocking.
Yeah.
And then, you know, you got to start sort of, you know, that's the thing, like with test days, even on prop events, that's how, you know, when you actually look at the AMS2 and all the setup changes and delve into it, it's just translating to the real world motorsport and how all them different things are. I mean, you'll get your driver come back in saying, I think we need a bit more wing or the dampers is off. You know,
feels odd. You know, it feels odd in this corner, and I need like a little bit more traction here or something like that. Yeah, or it's unlocking too much or not locking enough.
Yeah, so you might get, like you say, going back, you might get a setup off someone else and think, no, this is not right.
Yeah,
but you know, it's figuring out in your head straight away what's wrong with the car.
Yeah,
and you can normally tell by what the force feedback's normally telling you. You know, if you feel like you're understeering, then, man, stuff like floor charts and stuff like that can also help people as well, can't it?
Yeah.
You know, if they could relate to floor charts and stuff, say like they took, like, you know, one of the builds and think, oh, I'm still understeering a bit or whatever, you know, they can just say, oh, well, I need to.
One of my fears is about the sim racing community at large is, you know, the general reluctance of, you know, trying to get into setups, and then the fallback is, why should I even need to? Because other teams, you know, give them to you. But yeah, I think at that time we were doing that. We were in that league, and it was just compelling. The work itself was compelling to me. I think the hours I spent building the builds, and then the hours we worked together on each track, like, it really came, you know, I was watching the races intently to see, Tree, if I can see if there's any improvement we could make in the car for the next race at that track or a different track. Yeah. I was watching other cars to see how they were responding. One of the things that I think caught my I remember was how the hairpin at Hockenheim, how your competitors were getting a lot more traction out of that acceleration zone.
Oh, yes,
you were a little
yes.
bit slower, and I was like, how can I fix that? And I, you know, that was the compelling, it was because we opened up your diff so you could rotate. So you were a monster in rotation, but you just couldn't get that traction. But anyway, that was compelling to me. And that came around the same time as sort of like all of this, you know, a lot of AMS2 high level, like, oh, this is Simcade. Or, you know, this game doesn't have this. It's this. That's when it started to really. Maybe it was just me. That's when I started paying attention to it. But I was learning how amazing AMS2 can be, and at the same time hearing all of this negativity about how it's not, you know, it's not up to snuff in the sim racing world.
And the amount of changes that can, you know, that you can do, what you can feel.
Yeah. Like I, and I was building a car for me and then building a car for you with the setup changes. It wasn't like I was making like Dave's Driving Academy and selling a build and everybody thinks it's great and it works in the game perfect. No, I'm personalizing setups for people, like for you, like the guy that's going to be the hardest on a car in the game. If I could build a build for you, I mean, it means I could build. But the point being is like it wasn't good for me. You know, I couldn't drive your car. You know, I felt like I'd probably be spinning out way too much.
Mm-hmm. I mean, we found like stuff on the fly, didn't we?
Yeah.
You know, a few races where we obviously discovered where, you know, I can be changing the ARBs on the fly, changing my brake balance on the fly.
It was amazing when GT3s had that. I loved it so much.
It was just keeping everything within check. Tire temperatures.
Now it's traction control. Now that's the new meta is traction control. Using that to control your tire temps.
Personally, I don't like to use any traction whatsoever.
Yeah, well, I mean, you're good enough. You find the grip point traction yourself. Yeah, that's great. But I mean, if you wanted to, my point is, like, if you saw that your rears are getting overheated, instead of switching ARBs, you would maybe plop up a couple steps of traction control. It'll help you cool those tires down a little bit,
especially at a circuit, say Laguna Seca, down the corkscrew. You know, once your tires are starting to like sort of drop off, and you're in a quite a long stint, you're definitely going to need a little bit of TC on.
And the funny thing is, it's the corkscrew that it's probably causing a lot of the heat because you're the loading of the rears and you're sliding around. It's the more you put pressure on the tires, the more loading, and then you put a lot of lateral G on them and they start sliding, the more it heats them up, and that causes problems down the line. So, where do you envision, you know, what are your hopes about AMS2? Where do you envision AMS2 taking, you know, taking us as players and you personally as a esports, esports legend?
I wouldn't go that far, like, but
legend has a different context today. You can apply legend to anybody, apparently.
just try to make myself part of the game. That's all I'm trying to do.
Good.
I mean, I would like to see. You know, I've had these discussions before. I mean, going back to the sort of the trafficking and licensing of the game. You know, for the multiplayer and stuff like that. But it needs to be something that's going to, like, grip people, something that's going to keep them there, you know, with Razor's own servers or...
Yeah.
Now and again, they're going to, I've heard them mention that they're going to bring, like, a weekly TT in. So that's going to have a competition feel, even though there might not be any initial prizes, but there might be somewhere down the line.
Yeah, like the Project Cars 2 playbook.
Yeah, but like
maybe better.
I mean, I've noticed obviously Fanatec and everything's on board with the MS2, aren't they? So it'd be nice to see something like, you know, a wheel up for grabs if you're going to win this sort of TT event or whatever. You know, they might put a two week sort of deadline on it.
Yeah,
and the winner at the end gets the wheel. Something like that. You know, super cool.
That would be
but
cool.
Going forward, I would like to see sort of, you know, the competitions where there's something to sort of keep it spicy and, you know, something for everybody to aim to, like for every level. I mean, because it doesn't matter what level you're at. I mean, if you say competitions, you know, it's the excitement, you know, you're thinking, I'm going to have a crack at this.
Yeah.
And then if you look at the end and think, I'm miles off, you just keep on plugging away and think, I want to be in that top 10 by, a few months' time. Have the drive, the determination, the motivation. You keep on having them ingredients.
Keep refining your skills, learning new things. Everybody's going to get there. Try driving different cars, get faster in different cars, and then come back.
It's like, you know, when you look at the bigger picture, you need to be beaten to get better.
Of course.
If you're never beaten, you're never going to improve.
Right.
And somebody's never, like, give me a reality check.
Yeah.
And I think it's time to up your game again.
obviously AMS2, you know, it's, you know, at the point in where it's like on the cusp of coming out. Like, obviously we've had the come out party. The game hasn't, you know, gotten to the place where a lot of people thought it, you know, it could. Maybe everyone has different opinions about it, sort of like in that really kind of like feeling out phase. Mm-hmm. But I really do think in the next 6 months or so, this game is going to, it's going to turn around, and there's going to be sort of like a, just a critical mass of just people coming in, discovering exactly what's going on with it. And then hopefully at that point, you know, the Ryza, it would calm down over at Ryza, you know, with, as far as content, you know, and and physics updates and things like that. And they can start working on co-partnerships with, say, Fanatec, and having like a Fanatec championship, you know, over this, you know, the month of June, Fanatec Ryza AMS2 championship or something. And then you get that, and then that could build into something else, start getting some visibility. Visibility is always important. So, and that comes with player pops.
It's all promotion for Fanatec as well at the end of the day.
Yeah,
you know,
of course.
It's all promoting their company. I mean, for, you know, for something like maybe, you know, one of the new DDs or something, you know, one of the, you know, their low price ones.
Yeah.
It'll be a big like smash and grab for somebody to, you know, you get guys coming in from other games thinking, well, you know, I want this. But the thing is, what I say is obviously regards to the game and that style. I mean, it's not to get carried away and listen to people. I mean, just like, I would say to people, try it for yourself, you know. And if you're a driver who sort of likes driving on the edge, and you can get cars to come off the line, if that they're not meant to be like scale electrics cars and like certain games where if you're off the line, that's it. You know, I'm not going to mention other games because that's just my opinion. But you know, you can save a catch. You know, say you go down like Paddock Hill Bend, Brands Hatch, and you sort of done a little bit of a spin, you could rectify it. And we'll see that on the telly time and time again. You could save a car. If a car's gone off the edge of grip, you know, it's not meant to just go and you kind of get it back.
I think
AMS2, it can go way over the top and you won't get it back.
Yeah, but at some points, that's just natural. When you have max grip and max tire freshness, other times it's just as hard as any other game. But
no, just to say, like, not to be influenced, just if they haven't tried the game, give it a go yourself, and you know,
I think
you feel the sense of speed, you feel the sense of grip, you know, the force feedback. I feel is detailed. Obviously, this is my opinion, but I've found a game that I like, and I'm going to stick at it. Because I believe if you stick at something, you're only going to keep on proving. If you're hopping between games and different game physics, you're then confusing yourself in muscle memory and your brain, what you're trying to do. Because then you're confusing yourself. Do I like this one? Do I like that one? What do I like about that? What, you know?
Yeah.
You're backwards and forth, and you can never get settled within a set game.
Right.
You know, if you like that game, pick it and stick at it. Whether that's this game, the others that were mentioned, you know, pick it and stick it out. I mean, once this comes up on the air, Steel, I mean, I do believe this will be, and I'm hoping, but I still believe that it's going to be a big esports platform, this game.
It's going to be. The path that Ryza has is so apparent. They get the multiplayer thing rated straightened out. You know, people are more compelled to stick around in lobbies. Their friends are going to join them. They're going to meet new people in these lobbies. They're going to be coming on at the same times. You know, I'm going to be meeting guys like Lugnut and, you know, guys that I've met online that are familiar faces, you know, that I look forward to seeing when I'm racing. Like, you'll start familiar, and it like builds a community, and it's addictive. Let's before we wrap this up, I want to talk about you and your channel. You know, is there anything that's coming down the pipeline that you think anybody would be interested in about, you know, what your project is? Or are you just going to be doing, you know, world record videos, or is there anything else coming down?
Obviously, you know, I wish I was sort of more talented with my YouTube and skills and stuff like that. But if I get my head around it and that, I might have to, you know, get myself a little bit better with sort of creating videos, editing. But obviously, what I previously spoke to you about, there's something in the pipeline where I would like to create like a sort of academy. And that's not saying like me saying, oh yeah, I'm the super duper driver. I just feel like I could offer a lot.
Of course.
Whether that be racecraft, or whether that's like how we're doing TTs and how we're maximizing like performance levels, and whether that's focus and, you know, drive or whatever, you know.
So the Nemesis, like, you know, Academy?
Like one-on-one, like sort of track work.
Yeah.
See where they, you know, where they can improve, and, you know, just the general sort of, you know, coaching, if you like.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, my vision, I've always wanted to try go and get my own like race car, or get an opportunity to drive my own race car. So,
right.
I mean, that's my sort of vision, what I always wanted to be my end goal. And I mean, it's never looked likely that it's going to happen, but you just never know. You keep on plugging away, and, you know, right. somebody sort of notices you and think, you know what it is, I see this guy all the time, and, you know, he's doing something right. And there's always that little slight hope that I hold on to. But, I mean, if it comes to the end, I still want to, like, go through and get, like, me race license done and stuff. And then I just buy my own little track car.
Yeah.
And maybe just start that way, you know. You know, you've got to sort of put a lot in to try for someone to give you something in return.
Of course.
But once you stop pushing, then you just take your eye off the prize.
Right.
Whether that's competition prizes, or I actually have an end goal, and, you know, it's always the dream of all of us. That's why we're here.
Someone
to turn around and say, you know, I've got a little track car. You know, it's like sort of just like grassroots car. I want you to come and drive
hobby.
It for me.
It can be a hobby. It's compelling. It's competitive. Scratches a lot of itches. You know, even if it's going, you know, and it's, I remember my days when I went to the track when I was young with my dad, and it was a club. It was just like, he knew all these guys,
mm-hmm.
you know, rubbing elbows with Mark Donahue and Mario Andretti, Michael Andretti and Paul Newman, these guys like that used to do this stuff. It was just like, and then he was telling us stories like how they used to just hang out at night in their mm-hmm. RVs and campers and stuff. And they would just drink beer and just trade stories. I mean, it's a lifestyle. It's a
track life.
Track life. Yeah, exactly. It's a good term for it.
It's the smell of the rubber, the smell of the fuel.
Yeah, you don't have to be, you know, Blank's Pond or whatever. you can have a great time in a Formula V, you know.
Exactly.
Yeah. The missus might not like it so much, but. anyway, I wanted to thank you, Nemesis, for coming on and joining us. It was really a pleasure. It's been a pleasure to get to know you over the past few months and to work with you. And I respect you a lot. And your competitiveness is, I think, well suited for what you do. But at the same time, you've been humble and just absolutely one of the greatest things that I've experienced in sim racing in my short sim racing career was to have the opportunity to work with you and doing the thing that I love. And so I wanted to thank you for that. So
thank you. Appreciate it. No, you say you've been obviously professional throughout. So, I mean, you've helped us. You've rang us after races and stuff and, you know, how's the car and stuff like that. And it's just been totally professional. And I obviously respect what you do, you know.
Thank you. We should share this interest, man. And it comes from two different directions. You've got the skills. I don't, you know, so you're kind of driving the car for me in the way I want to. So, great. So everybody out there, I wanted to thank you for sticking around. Moving forward, we're going to be coming back to regular Boltcast episodes with Oz. And we also have some exciting interviews that are being planned. So keep sticking around with us coming up. Immediately with the channel, we're going to be having some more custom default setups for you, be working and plugging away on those. So I wanted to thank you all for watching, and in the meantime, take care.